Call Executive Director Brad Poster at 518-755-2155.
Hey, dude. Hey, you want to get a cup of coffee with me?
Oh, no, man. I just went to get a cup of coffee. But you want to go get a cup of coffee?
Oh, yeah. I would like to go get a cup of coffee with you. Hey, do you want to go down the street later on and get a couple cups of coffee?
Yeah, all right. I'll go get a cup of coffee.
Hey, do you want to watch my coffee while I go into the coffee shop to get another coffee?
Oh, yeah. I got two cups right here. I'll just watch your cups while I watch my cups.
Battlefield Earth, every Tuesday.
Well, welcome to The Right Opinion on WGXC 90.7 FM. How are you this morning? We have an interesting show today. I'm going to tell you a little bit about it before we get going here. And today we're going to have an expose, if you will, about the federal employee pay freeze that we heard so much about. This happened about 2.5-3 years ago, I guess, and it was highly publicized that federal employees who were perceived as doing very well should bear some of the pain that everyone was going through in a bad economy. And the president announced that the million plus federal employees would therefore have their pay frozen. Now, I was a federal employee at the time that happened. I was also involved, surprisingly, with the American Federation of Government Employees, which is the federal labor union, although they're not allowed to strike. So I'm going to be talking about this from firsthand experience, but of course the opinions expressed here are mine and mine alone. So we're going to be talking about that. We have a great guest today, Quinton Cross, former Hudson City Alderman, and we're going to be discussing the Section 8 housing program, which is taxpayer funded. And then, of course, we're going to play some great country music. We're going to be talking about some of the shows coming up, because I do have some exciting news about future guests. So let's get started here and talk about the federal employee pay freeze. Like I said, I was a federal employee when this all began about 3 years ago. And in all fairness, federal employees do quite well. They earn a very good living. They have great benefits, terrific medical plan, 401k, really soup to nuts. And that's why the administration felt it was important to make this announcement that federal employee pay would be frozen, because a lot of people were upset at how well federal employees were doing in a time of this economic downturn that was occurring. Now, in all fairness, there was an elimination at the time of the federal employee cost of living adjustment. So that is true. The COLA, the cost of living adjustment that federal employees would get annually, was eliminated at that time. So that is totally true. However, what the public wasn't told and what the media did not mention is that federal employee pay did not go down. It didn't stay the same. It has gone consistently up. And I'm going to explain why that is. Basically, there are a number of ways that your pay increases as a federal employee. One is the annual cost of living adjustment, which was eliminated. The other one, another one, is called the step increase. And that's basically a tenure-based increase in your pay. Now, let me give you an example. Let's say you come out of college, you take a federal job as what's called a General Schedule 9. There are 15 levels. So you can take a job as a General Schedule, well, let's say a General Schedule 7, because that might be more typical. And this is what is called a career ladder position, which means that you come in as a 7, but if you get through your first year probation and your performance is satisfactory, after 12 months, you get a tenure increase, which is called a step increase. And you are promoted to a GS-9. You skip over 8 and you go to 9. In another 12 months, you get your second step increase for tenure, and you also get promoted to GS-11. And that is a typical career ladder situation in the federal government, what they would call internally the 7-9-11 career track. So those people, for example, who came in just before the so-called federal employee pay freeze, they got their promotions during the pay freeze. Not only did they get promoted, but they were actually skipping grades. From they skip 8 and go to 9, and they skip 10 and go to 11. And when you get a promotion in a grade, your pay goes up substantially, and you're getting the step increases for tenure. And by the way, when you get promoted, the steps start at 1. Again, there you can get up to 10 steps during your career. So, in other words, if you were, let's say, a grade 12 and you had been in the government a long time and you never got beyond grade 12, you would end up being a grade 12 step 10. So career employees would be getting these tenure increases. And then again, there are the promotions even for those who aren't necessarily in the career ladder positions. Okay, now I'm not done. There are other things that you taxpayers are paying for. TSP, matching contributions. Now, TSP stands for the Thrift Savings Plan. And federal employees have this 401k type thrift savings plan. And basically, let's say you contribute the first 3% of your salary to this 401k type plan. And by the way, our congressmen and senators have the same thing. Well, the government, with your tax dollars, immediately doubles that 3% contribution. So as soon as it goes in, it becomes, well, like 6%. Now, the next 2% you contribute above the 3%, they match, they contribute another 50% of that. So you get your first 3% doubled, and you get 50% on the next 2%. This all was taking place during, and is taking place right now during the sequester of the TSP matching contributions, taxpayer funded. So far, just to retrace my steps here, so far we understand that, yes, the cost of living increase was eliminated, but the step increase for tenure was not, and that's every year. Promotions, which in some case are every year for the first few years, were not eliminated. And of course, you can apply for other jobs at any time, even if you're not in a career ladder. Then there's the TSP matching contributions. And then what a lot of people don't know is that There are also performance awards and special act awards in government. These can be quite significant, especially if you're in the higher grades. But basically, what a performance award is an evaluation of your performance for the year, and you could get a unsatisfactory, satisfactory, fully successful, highly successful, or outstanding. Now, there was a time when I first joined the government where it was rare that you would get a performance award unless you had outstanding performance. But then they got into this system, thanks to the American Federation of Government Employees, where if you had highly successful performance or outstanding performance, you would get a performance award, the difference being that those who had outstanding performance would get more. And then, of course, you have special act awards, which are not tied to your annual performance, but it's just for doing something special. So just to rehash things a little bit, we're talking here about the federal employee pay freeze, which didn't happen. And the cost of living adjustment was eliminated, as I said, but federal employee pay was going up during the so-called federal employee pay freeze. It was going up by virtue of tenure increases, promotions, TSP matching funds, performance awards, special act awards, and you paid for all of this, folks. And, you know, quite frankly, most of the people I met while I was a Fed were people who wanted to do a good job and work hard. And there were some very impressive people that I met in government. And I feel that, by and large, these people deserve to have a good job with good benefits. But the general public didn't need to be misled in regard to this pay freeze, because it just didn't happen, folks. Now, on that note, we do play music here too. And by now you probably know that Toby Keith is one of my favorites. And I'm going to play a song now by Toby Keith that's probably one of the longest country songs that ever became a hit. It's almost like Toby got to 4 minutes and said, "Hey, you know what? I'm having so much fun, and this is so good, I'm just going to keep going." And what really sets this song apart, in my opinion, is the instrumental sections, which I don't feel there's enough of that in country music. But you'll see what I mean. We're going to get going here with Toby Keith, and the song is A Woman's Touch. Thank you.
Just an empty space surrounded by the pieces of a badly broken heart that's forgotten. A woman's touch. When I look in the mirror, the only thing I see are traces of the man I used to be. Late at night I hear it, it cannot be denied. A lonely voice is crying out from somewhere deep inside. What my heart needs is a woman's touch, a tender hand. It's rough and ragged edges. Sure could use some love. What my heart needs is a woman's touch.
You're listening to Toby Keith, the king of country music. Toby doesn't want to stop. Control yourself, Toby. Sit down, for God's sake. That was Toby Keith and the rather long A Woman's Touch. And Quentin Cross just walked into the studio. Good morning, Quentin.
Good morning, Ed. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Quentin, for those who don't know, is a former City of Hudson alderman. And the City of Hudson is in Columbia County, New York. And Quentin's got a lot of experience with the federally, the taxpayer-funded Section 8 program. I guess we could give this show the theme, Your Tax Dollars at Work. But I wanted Quentin to be here to talk about the program, and I guess we could start with an explanation from Quentin as to, well, what is Section 8, Quentin? What is it?
Well, thanks for having me again, Ed, and I want to thank the president for taking a 5% pay cut on behalf of the taxpayers. Thank you, Mr. President. Section 8 program is a program designed to help people who are working afford housing. And normally in Section 8 programs, and it could be various different types of Section 8. It could be the voucher for apartments. It could be income-based vouchers for projects. There's a variety of things. It could be programs for home ownership. But normally you tend to see people who are employed, have children, and wouldn't be able to afford an apartment and put food on the table. They get an assistance.
All right. Well, that sounds worthwhile. Now, how to those people listening out there in Columbia and Greene County and Southern Rensselaer and Northern Dutchess, how would someone who needs help with their housing, how would they actually get Section 8? What do they have to do?
They have to fill out a form and provide their income statements, but it takes forever. It's couple-year waiting list.
Okay, and by the way, in the interest of full disclosure, I already admitted that I was a federal employee, but mm-hmm. I also had my career with the Department of Housing and Development, which administers the Section 8 program. I guess you could say they provide the money.
They provide the money. It's administered locally.
And they're supposed to have some oversight over it, but so there, you're saying that there's an application process and there's usually a waiting list. And
yeah, the application process is very straightforward. It'll probably take you about 10 minutes to fill it out. And it's a long waiting list, and it depends. They have certain things that I would say is a problem that could bump you up. So if you're homeless, it might bump you up a little bit. Domestic violence is a big thing.
Disability.
It bumps you up differently mm-hmm. on the list.
But there are income requirements,
oh, absolutely.
Right? So minimums and maximums, right?
Yes.
Okay, so, and by the way, I have been away from HUD for 2 years, so I'm not making, even people that are there, there's so much regulation that, you know, even if you're working there, you have to look things up because it's things are always changing. What Let's use as an example for this show a young or not young married couple with one child, okay, and they're working but they don't make much money. How much do you need? Or what is the most you can earn to get Section 8?
I don't really know, but if you said a young married couple working,
yeah,
that's a flag.
Right.
For me, yeah, because it's not, once you, from my work and looking at some of the stuff when I was on community development and planning, which oversaw Section 8, it's sort of geared toward the single mother.
Okay.
Yes, it seems to be like, or the disabled, or the, you know, the senior citizen type situation. So once you, it's interesting because I believe that in some ways it breaks up the family. Once you bring two people in, you know, it's a family, it changes the equation.
But I mean, there is income limitation here. For example, even if you are a single mom, you know, you could be working if you're a single mom. You could be, for example, let's say you're a single mom, but you're a nurse. You're making a good, decent living, so you wouldn't be able to get Section 8 because you're earning too much money. correct? Is that
true?
Is that correct?
It's basically 30% of your income has to go toward
right, that. Right. So so once you, I think what you're saying is, once you get in to Section 8 housing, the rule of thumb is that they take your monthly income, your I think it's your gross, and they take 30% of that, and that's what your rent is. So, to give an example, if you were earning $250 a week, which isn't a lot, $1,000 a month, well, 30% of that is $300, so that's what your rent would be. Now, who pays the difference between that $300 and what the apartment's actually worth?
The government would.
Yeah, so that so
but
that,
I don't know if I wouldn't. I don't know if Section 8 is that clear because they, it's that's more project based.
Right.
But,
right.
Because you don't. It's Section 8. To be quite honest with you, is for the independent. It's people who go out. It's not project based. You have to go out and find your own place. It has to be inspected. You have to do a lot more work than going into
right.
the regular.
That's. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah.
What. See, there's two types of Section 8. One type, which most people actually think of when they think about Section 8, is public housing. You think about the projects, public housing projects. Now, in that case, the Section 8 assistance is tied to the apartment itself. So whoever lives in that apartment gets the assistance. But then what Quentin's talking about is a voucher.
A voucher.
A Section 8 voucher, which, and you can explain the voucher.
The voucher, and for the public housing, that 30% is finite. That's what it is. But for the voucher program, it's a formula that they use similar to the project base, but you have to go out and find the apartment, see if it meets your budget, has to be inspected. It's a lot. It's quite a few more procedures you have to go through.
Right.
More oversight. You come in more to see if your income has changed and things of that nature.
Yeah. Now let me just bring up some problems. And by the way, the opinions expressed here are mine alone and my guests.
Mine's
and,
only.
And his alone. But whenever you have a maximum income to qualify for anything, okay, now I don't know what this family of three that I'm using as an example, what the maximum income would be. I'm guessing it would probably be in the area of $25,000 to $27,000 a year, something like that, based on my previous experience. So that put some people in a curious position, because what if the limit is $27,000 and the family is earning $28,000? Well, that's a hard nut to swallow. Hey, I'm paying $900 a month rent, and because I'm earning $1,000 too much, I can't pay.
That's for everything.
Yeah,
that's many programs not
right.
HUD, public assistance. There's some people who are $14 over.
Yeah,
and they can't get assistance.
So and you do have. Don't get me wrong. You do have to have a line in the sand
Absolutely.
Somewhere. But what I think happens is, like, let's say I'm working 32 hours a week. Okay, and I'm at $28,000, and I need to be to get to Section 8 and pay $200 a month rent. I need to be at $27,000, so I need to get rid of $1,000 of salary. So I could go to my boss and say, you know what? Look, you're giving me 32 hours of work a week. Can we knock it down to 30, and then next year I think I might be able to qualify for Section 8 because I'm earning less. I mean, stuff like that does happen.
It does happen, but it it's still going to take you 2 years to get in.
Right, right. And by it's like in New York City, by the way, I think it's more like 15 years.
You know.
And I remember it's not funny for the family, because they had evidently, they lived in a place where there was hardly a waiting list for, I don't know where it was, Des Moines, Iowa, or whatever. You know, where if a person qualified for Section 8, then you might have to wait a few weeks, a few months, but you're going to get in because there wasn't a big waiting list. So this family thinks that that's the way it is all over. You know, so they have some relatives in New York City say, well, we don't want to live in Des Moines. We want to come to New York City. They didn't do enough research, so it was like a big family too, like three kids, parents. And they come to New York City and go to apply for Section 8, which they were eligible for. The waiting list is 15 years. Sorry.
So they didn't have they must have been a project based.
Exactly.
Because vouchers can travel.
The vouchers can travel, yes, right. Yeah. And by the way, there was a time when vouchers weren't that prevalent. It was mostly project-based.
Yeah.
And then vouchers became more popular. I think HUD at some point came to the realization that it's sort of unfair to take large groups of people that, you know, are having issues and forcing them all to be together. Why shouldn't they just go out into society and live where other people are living if there's a landlord willing to take the voucher rather than congregating everyone in a project? So that's sort of what's going on. Now, what is your... By the way, and the landlords get the full rent. Like if someone's paying $300 rent for a two-bedroom apartment, that's obviously not the fair market rent. And HUD does establish the fair market rent, and the landlord does get the difference. So if the fair market rent is $1,200 a month, the tenant under Section 8 is paying $300, then you and I pay the difference of $900 to the landlord. That's basically how it works. Now, do you have any specific thoughts about Section 8 in our local area, like in Columbia County?
Yeah,
what is
definitely.
What's going on?
Well, it's a long waiting list. A lot of people don't want to accept Section 8 vouchers because of the negative connotations surrounding the people who get vouchers, and also because of the ineffectiveness of the staff to get the paperwork done in time to pay these landlords on time. I think something might be giving, because in Governor Cuomo's budget address, he has stated that he would be moving forward legislation that mandates landlords to take that. I don't know if you know that, but yes. So, and he's the governor, and I believe he can get whatever he wants passed at this moment. So,
evidently, it does seem that way.
Yeah, it does. It sort of seems that way.
Yeah.
So that is a sort of big deal in a community like that, where you have to accept a Section 8 voucher.
Right.
That changes the makeup, and it diversifies the community in a good way, I think.
So, I mean, what's your guess? And I really don't know. In Columbia County, or maybe you do have some statistics, how many people in Columbia County are on Section 8? Do you have any idea?
I have no idea. Well,
I mean, is it in the hundreds or is it in the thousands? Or
I have no idea, because it's run by two places. Columbia Opportunities runs the county,
right,
so to speak, and Hudson Housing Authority now runs the city.
Right.
So,
but now for those familiar with the city of Hudson, I'm talking now about those apartments right on the water down near Amtrak.
All of that.
Now, all of that is Section 8, right?
All of that is income-based. Those are project-based. I don't know. Can't tell you it's Section 8. It could be the State Division of Housing and Community Renewal.
Okay,
That doesn't have to be a federal project,
right,
so to speak.
So it could be a mix.
It is a mix. It's a mix. But we do know Bliss Towers is... We do know Providence Hall and Scholar Court is.
Okay, well, those are big developments. Are, so it is probably in the thousands.
If you take us in the county, yeah, you would have to say that.
So, do you? And Quentin, did you ever live in Section 8?
Yeah, I actually grew up. I was born and raised in Hudson Housing Authority in high rise, apartment 815 and 1C Columbia Apartments. And then when I got elected, I moved back into Bliss Towers because I thought that's where I needed to be. That's where the bulk of my base was.
Do you, as a rule, do you feel the average person that's in one of these areas that is a Section 8 recipient, do you think they're content with it? Would they rather be off it? Would they rather not need it? What is your
Well, there's take? Two trains of thought there. My mom is a state employee, like has 30 years of time in, and I had someone also who, you know, I considered my aunt, like very close friends. They started in the state together. They both lived in Bliss Towers. When they started the first-time homebuyers course, my mom moved. She got her house, and the person who I called my aunt, she didn't want to move. But she had a lot of time. So she stayed in project-based housing, paying what we would consider a New York City rent. She'd rather pay because it's income-based, and she was a state worker for all these years, so she was making real money. She'd rather stay for the convenience of the garbage pickup for all. She didn't want to worry about anything, so she'd rather stay there. I think that in this community, the project-based housing do a disservice to the constituency down there because they don't want to empower them. They don't do anything to empower them. They, you know.
Are we agreeing on something here?
I would assume so. I think.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah,
News bulletin. Quentin Cross and Ed Furtick agree on something.
Absolutely.
And you're hearing it live.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I feel that if the taxpayer is funding any social program, there should be some kind of effort to reduce the need for the program. That's what success looks like. And I when I was at HUD, I didn't see enough of how to help you get out of it if you want to get out of
it. And, well, you're not going to see that. And in this community, it's very ironic because, you know, the same people who tend to be people who believes in a limited government, conservative-minded folk, are the same people who are benefiting from the plight. There's no people of color working down in any of these projects. They don't have no jobs. Their kids don't have no jobs. They're not getting anything out of it other than an apartment. It's the same people, the same families, their kids and their kids. It's generational who are benefiting from it. They're making real money, getting real pensions from these things, and they can't even have job training down there when they should be doing that.
And there's, correct me if I'm wrong from your own experience, but there does seem to be some element of passing, like you have to recertify your income occasionally, because obviously if you're starting a lot of money, you can't be there.
Every year.
So they every year they recertify you. Now you move in and you have a 12-year-old. 6 years later, the 12-year-old is 18, might go out and earn money. So they have to know about these things.
I know about 90% of the people because they just move them to an apartment of their own.
But that's my point. So the parents it's not an intentional thing, but the Section 8 subsidy is really, it's passed down to the children in many cases.
In that way of life.
In that way of life.
And it's not like it can't be changed. It's
right.
easy. Like, not only, because they have solutions. HUD has solutions. They have money that you can get to do these things.
Right.
But in a place like this, we don't want that type of money.
Right.
We don't
we're agreeing that it's not happening as best as we would both like it. But we're going to take a break. Quentin is staying with us, and we're not really taking a break. We're going to some music here again, and we're gonna keep going with Toby Keith, because this is Honor Toby Keith Day, I guess. And here's Toby with Who's That Man? Thank you.
the old hotel. I know this boulevard much too well. It hasn't changed since I've been gone. Ah, this used to be my way home. They paved the road through the neighborhood. I guess the county finally fixed it good. It was getting rough. Someone finally complained enough. Fight the tears back with their smile. Stop and look for a little while. Oh, it's plain to see. The only thing missing is me. That's my house and that's my car. That's my dog in my backyard. There's the window to the room where she lays her pretty head. I planted that tree out by the fence not long after we moved in. There's my kids and that's my wife. Who's that man? I pulled in, would it cause a scene? They're not really expecting me. Those kids have been through hell. I hear they've adjusted well. Turn around in the neighbor's drive. I'd be hard to recognize in his pickup truck. It's just an old fixer-up. Drive away one more time. A lot of things running through my mind. I guess the less things change, the more they never seem the same. That's my house and that's my car. That's my dog in my backyard. There's a window to the room where she lays her pretty head. My wife, who's that man running my life? That man running my life. Who's that man?
Well, we're back to The Right Opinion at WGXC 90.7 FM with live feed at WGXC.org. And this is your host on The Right Opinion, Ed Furtick. And we have a guest with us today, Quentin Cross. We've been talking about Section 8. And before we get back to Quentin, I just want to read a headline article from the Hudson Register Star this morning. It's not a long article. County Task Force Raids D&D Deli. as part of the ongoing investigation into welfare fraud by the Columbia County Welfare Fraud Task Force, a search warrant was executed at 9 a.m. Tuesday at the D&D Deli at the intersection of 5th Street and Long Alley in Hudson. The investigation began more than a year ago and involves the alleged illegal use of food stamps. It expanded beyond the local agencies to include state and federal offices. The warrant was issued by the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of New York and signed by Judge Randolph Treese. Agencies involved in the investigation and/or executing the search warrant included the Columbia County Sheriff's Office, Columbia County District Attorney's Office, Columbia County Department of Social Services, Hudson Police Department, New York State Office of Taxation and Finance, United States Department of Agriculture, Office of the Inspector General, U.S. Secret Service, and the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Albany offices. The investigation is continuing. The Columbia County Welfare Fraud Task Force was developed by the County Board of Supervisors and includes the Sheriff's Office, Department of Social Services, District Attorney's Office, and County's Attorney's Offices. No arrests have been made as of yet, said Columbia County Sheriff's Department Lieutenant James Andrews. That's from this morning's Hudson Register Star, Columbia County, New York, headline. A lot of overkill, Quentin says. So back to our guest, Quentin Cross, who's a former City of Hudson alderman, and we're talking about the taxpayer-funded Section 8 housing program. And Quentin, when I worked at HUD, I had been especially in the early days of my career, I was in the public housing division, but then I moved into the legal department, and where I was working with some really egregious legal issues. But in my public housing days, I would go into apartments occasionally, and you know, and I wasn't trying to get anything on the tenants. That wasn't the reason. It was because we were trying to find out if the projects were managed properly by the management. That was why I would go in, and I would go into apartments that were very impressive. I'm in the sense that very clean. And you could see that the family that lived there was just trying everything to make their home a nice home. And then I would go into others, and it was very disappointing. You would see holes in doors that were obviously made by a foot. You would see, you know, the batteries missing from the smoke detectors, knives laying on the floor, you know, I mean, utensils with kids walking around. What is your impression of the typical Section 8 apartment that you've seen?
They've been good people. Many people come into that circumstance from a bad place.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Need extra help. There's people who, you know, fell on hard times or have been gentrified in this community to that place. People who've never expected to be there, and they're trying to work their way up. But in this area, they're working their way up with no assistance.
Right.
Because although the mayor of the city appoints 5 members, which is a majority, there's 5 members and the 2 tenants, and you do what you want to do. There's no, I'm going to watch and make sure that things are going on well. I'm going to manage it. We might have a phone call.
Yeah.
Hello, WGXC. Oh, okay. Well, thank you very much for that piece of information. And I am going to solve that problem right now. Okay. Well,
we were lucky enough to have a listener call in and tell us about a little technical difficulty we were having here, which I think is resolved. So say hello, Quentin.
Hello.
Yeah, okay. Quentin wasn't on the air before, so I had been saying that some apartments, Section 8 apartments I've seen, have been really nice, and others have been quite disappointing, and Quentin was talking about that. So you can just repeat what you're saying.
Yeah, basically I'm saying people are coming from hard places in life. A lot of people who have moved up and got put in public housing based on a domestic violence issue, mental health issue, people who've, you know, some who have come out of treatment and some who have been gentrified to that position, who have lived all up and down Moore Street and all around and who have been gentrified to that community over the last 10 or so years. So you have different walks of life. You have people who, you know, are just have fell on hard times and who just need a step up. But I believe that if you're talking about public housing and you're talking about the concept of a community in public, you need to have those services necessary so that they don't have to stay there.
Right.
And what occurs in this community is that, you know, once you they get them there, they want to keep them there because we need these 132 unit
and,
deals.
And I have to tell you, and Quentin, you may not know this. You may not know this, but, you know, this money for Section 8 does come from the taxpayer. HUD, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, administers it, and they do have oversight over how it's used, and they're certainly involved in fraud, waste, and abuse. And they want to assure that the buildings are in good condition, that the units are in good condition, because people deserve a nice place to live, especially if it's taxpayer funded.
Well, come to Hudson. I'm told that when it rains.
Yeah, that's my point. Are the feds coming to Hudson or anywhere near here?
Yeah.
Now, the interesting thing the thing that I don't think you're aware of. The New York City office of HUD has a territory up to Poughkeepsie and all the way across Long Island. So they have oversight over Section 8 all the way up to Poughkeepsie. Now, who do you think has oversight for Poughkeepsie and beyond?
Buffalo.
Buffalo. Quentin scores 100% on this test. Now, I've never understood that. Because there is a HUD office in Albany, actually a few miles outside of Albany. But they don't have any oversight. They do something entirely different. And I've always wondered why we would expect, in regard to oversight of a Section 8 program, people from Buffalo to come down, because they don't.
They don't regularly, and it seems to be a relationship where it's a live and let live. Any recourse that I have had in dealing with HUD issues has been the director of HUD New York, New Jersey, based on people I know in government who have opened those doors.
Yeah. Well, Quentin, I just want to announce right now that I spoke in person to the mayor of Hudson. He said he's going to come on the show, although we don't have a date arranged yet.
Yeah, so that'll be wonderful.
And in a minute, I'm going to ask you what you would tell him if he was sitting here about Section 8, if you would tell him anything.
Yeah.
We also just this morning made an agreement with Assemblyman Steve McLaughlin to have a pre-recorded interview, which will be on one of my shows probably in May or maybe early June, but I'm going to try for May. And we also got permission for a pre-recorded interview with Congressman Chris Gibson.
Okay. When are you going to get D.B. Barrett?
Well,
I am a Democrat.
That's Victor's show.
Okay.
You got to talk to Victor. I can give you his email address.
No, thank you.
But no, we get all these radical right-wingers on the right opinion. But anyway, I want to thank you, Quentin, for being here. You're very, very knowledgeable about Section 8.
Thanks for having me,
before
sir.
I let you go, though, in 1 minute, what would you tell the mayor of Hudson if he was sitting here about Section 8 or...
About, I would say empower the people. That's what it's about. It's about not keeping them in that place in life, and what we call, biblically speaking, in that Patmos situation. We got to get them out of it. We got to, you know, get them out and empowered. And you do that by providing programs, and HUD pays for those programs. So you don't have to come out of your pocket. You just have to, they don't have any programs. They don't have a tenants group. They don't have anything. It's all give, give, give.
Are you willing to give him some of your ideas?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And he has 5 members on the board, so he should, you know, be right on top of it. So thank
all
you
right.
for your time, sir.
Well, thank you, Quentin Cross. And thanks for listening, viewers. Listeners, not viewers. If you're viewing me, you got some skills that I'm not aware of. But we're moving away from Toby Keith. Sorry, Toby. And we're going to Sarah McLaughlin to close out the show. And this is going to be a great tune called Working on a Mystery. Coming through the headphones.